Welcome to Making Sense, the podcast for people who want financial freedom without giving up their coffee. I'm Frances Cook, an independent financial journalist, best-selling author, and fellow financial freedom seeker who helps make money simple for you. This podcast is supported by our friends at KiwiBank. It can be really hard to make life and work fit together, and that's particularly the case when kids come along. Time becomes scarce than ever, but you also very much need to keep paying the bills. Now, you might not think that that's the ideal time to launch your own business, but that's what One Mum did. And actually, it's been a bit of a theme when I talk to fellow parents. Anyway, back to today's chat, because this mum took the leap into self-employed life and found that with a bit of planning, she was actually working less, earning more, and enjoying life a lot more. So here's the unusual way she found to make it work.
Before we get into it, Making Sense is stoked to be supported by KiwiBank. We've teamed up to bring you insight directly from their people, the experts who live and breathe this stuff every day. It's not the outdated stuff that worked 5 years ago. It's what's happening right now in the industry to help you make the most of your money. This is making Kiwi better off. This is Kiwi. All right, and welcome in Beth Vickers, vocal coach, singer, doula, gardening influencer. We will get into all of that soon, the many, many wonderful job titles you've got. I just want to say before we get started, disclaimer that we know each other. It's going to be very obvious throughout this conversation, I think, that we are mates. We know each other. We hang out all the time. So it's not like we do hard-hitting confrontational interviews here anyway, but this definitely won't be one of those.
I mean, give me a minute. I might get into something.
Yeah, maybe. We can do a like real grilling just to keep you on your toes, test that friendship.
Yeah.
All right, so what we've got you on to talk about, though, is something I've been watching from the sidelines and have been so admiring of, because before kids, you had, I hope this is okay phrasing, a fairly standard career. How would you describe your previous time before kids and your career? Were you someone who was quite career focused, climbing the ladder? What was that time in your life like?
Yeah, I would say I was very career focused, actually. I got into recruitment, I think I was about 19 years old when I first started, and then had, you know, a few roles, and I felt like I was kind of steadily climbing the ladder, and that felt really important to me at the time. I had my sights set on being an executive someday, which now just feels so alien to me. But I think the kind of standard career that you do seems the most obvious thing, right? So I was like, oh yeah, I'll just go down this path. And then I had kids and that all exploded.
Yeah, as it does, as it does. It's funny, isn't it, when you look back and you look back at some of the values that you held, because I look back at some of the decisions I made early in my career where I got this opportunity to go and live and work in Cambodia for 3 months.
Oh, wow.
I turned it down and did a 2-week thing instead. Still great. But I did a 2-week thing instead because I was worried about turning down a job that I'd got that was this entry-level journalism job. And I look back and I think, now, why did I do that? That's this amazing life experience that I said no to because I was really scared of not climbing the ladder. But isn't it funny? You start out in these careers and you're shooting for the stars, great and all. It feels so important and it feels so time-pressured sometimes, doesn't it?
Totally. Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good way to describe it. I think it's quite a traditional view, right? You know, like our parents, their parents, you go into a company or you go into a career and you do that career for your entire life. But we work for a very big chunk of our life. The thought of doing the same thing for, I don't know, 40, 50 years just sounds revolting to me.
I know. It's funny, isn't it? Because there's these patchwork careers, and we're going to get into this glorious patchwork that you've created.
Yeah.
And I know sometimes people feel like it's very unstable, and it can be. But the flip side of that, of course, is there's this glorious opportunity to create something much more interesting and varied.
Yeah.
I feel like both are true, and you can kind of lean into the enjoyment by leaning into the latter, right?
Yeah, I do feel like if you are to ever kind of break that mold of the standard career, you really have to evaluate your own values, what's important to you in your life at that moment. Mm. You know, for some people, the most important value for them is stability. Mm. And so stepping away from a stable career will feel like an attack on their life almost. But for other people, it's like a revelation. It feels amazing because their values are flexibility or whatever. And I think that changes a lot throughout your life. Mm. I used to have that stability was really important to me. And it still is to a degree, but I think less so.
Well, yeah, let's talk about that in terms of the values piece, because obviously huge life change. I mean, I haven't gone through every life change that there is, but of all the life changes I have gone through, kids for me has been the biggest, upended everything.
Absolutely.
Right? And it impacts every area of your life, especially career. So then you had kids.
Yes.
And you hit a bit of a shock in terms of how the working world combines with motherhood. Tell me what that time was like and the sort of realizations you started having.
So I think a lot of mothers will relate to this when I say my entire sense of self and my entire value set disintegrated. And it was like, okay, who the heck am I? What do I actually care about? And I tried to go back into my career, my recruitment career, and I felt like I wasn't giving my work the attention it needed. And I felt like I wasn't giving my kid, you know, when I won, the attention he needed. And I was getting sick all the time and I was exhausted. So it was like no one was winning. And it's like, this is not designed for parents. It just isn't. And I think, you know, there's lots of amazing flexible employers, but even the most flexible employer will need you to be there, you know, within certain hours of the day or whatever. And when you've got a kid going to daycare and they're getting sick all the time because that's what they do, there's just such a misalign between the standard working world and parenthood. And you have to work now. It's not really an option, you know, unless you're very, very fortunate. It's not an option for most people to not work.
Yeah. So you started hitting that. You started having these realizations. I mean, as you say, you have to work.
Yeah.
So was there a little bit of a feeling of feeling trapped, or were you looking for other places to go with it? What was that feeling as you started to hit this wall and think, this isn't working? Where did your brain go from there and how did you feel about it?
I have to say I floundered for quite a while. At least a year, maybe even two. I went back to my previous role. And I felt like my entire life had changed. I had completely changed and nothing at work had changed. And it's like, well, hold on, my world's exploded. Why are all of you just carrying on like this? And it felt really disconnected. I felt that I didn't really care about my clients' problems. I didn't really care about, I don't know, stupid meetings that you have at work. It's all worked hard, but I don't know. I think you can probably relate to that. I think a lot of mums could probably relate to a lot of what I'm saying.
The heart wasn't in it, huh?
Yeah. And so I left my role because I felt like I needed to take a step up. In my brain it was, oh, it's not working, so I need to excel. I need to do the next thing in my career. So I tried to do that and went to a role that was just completely wrong for me. Just such a different way of working. And so I only worked there for a couple of months, I think, before moving on, because I thought, well, working in recruitment, I know how expensive it is when you're bedded in to move on for both you and the company. So I thought, cut my losses, move on. And then I tried lots of different things to see how they fit, and a lot of them didn't. And I think that was the big kind of floundering piece, is I was like, where do I belong? Where do I fit? This is horrendous. And I got to a point when I was pregnant with my second that I was like, I'm just going to go do some admin or something. I have to just go do some admin. And luckily found a really nice role that was great that I worked in up until I had him and then came back into after having him. Unfortunately was made redundant, but that was kind of one of the big catalysts of everything that's happened now.
Yeah, because I feel like sometimes We're so in these modes of thinking, and please correct me if this is not your experience. I might be projecting on this, but certainly I, for a long time, felt like, well, this is how I do my job and this is what I've done. And it can be not working, very much not working. And you're still so stuck in that, oh, well, I'll just go harder and...
Yeah, just work harder, do more, give more of myself to
it. Right? Smacking my head against the brick wall is not knocking it down. So how about I smack my head even harder, you know?
That is such a good one.
Right? So you started to hit this point and you had found a job that kind of worked and then you got made redundant.
Mm.
Was that the final sort of shock to the system that was like, no, I've got to do something different? Did it take something more than that? You know, what was the thought process from there to hit you to the point of, I've got to do something different?
I kind of had a bit of a meltdown. I was working from home, which was great. I had two children and I was trying to now fit work into having two children. And I was really struggling with a lot of things. I felt like my functioning stopped being as good as it could have been, to put it in a very nice way. And so I went to the doctor thinking I might have an iron deficiency or something. I was then referred to a psychiatrist and I was diagnosed with ADHD. Through that entire process, I had a, you know, through this meltdown, it was, I can't do this. I have to do something else. I am not happy. I have to set something else up for myself. So I started vocal coaching. I'd been to a vocal retreat and the lady who runs it, who's absolutely amazing, Charlotte West, if anyone's ever in Auckland, highly recommend her. And she was like, oh, why don't you just teach singing? And I was like, what? This is an option for me? I had never considered it. I've sung my whole life. I know so much about the voice and how it works. I love people, but I can't play piano. And so it seemed like an option that wasn't viable. I'd never even really considered it as something that could be viable. But when she said that, it was like, oh my goodness. And she was like, yeah, you don't need to play piano, just use backing tracks. Whoa. So I set that up as kind of like a little side hustle, which then became my main hustle because I got made redundant. So I had kind of set it up in the background as something I really enjoyed, just to have something that I really enjoyed as much as anything. And then when I was made redundant, it was a case of, shit, okay, what do I do here? I can give up this thing that's making me really happy to go back to something more stable, or I can just go balls to the wall and make this work.
Yeah, I love that. And, you know, I think that's one of the great things about a side hustle. I know side hustles can sometimes, for good reason, be a little bit controversial, right? Because the idea of you must work every single hour of the day and monetize every single hobby, categorically, I disagree with that. But side hustles can be great in terms of giving you a bit of a stable sort of side income, and also an amazing way to test a business idea. And okay, you weren't thinking that at the beginning, but you kind of did that accidentally. You had been testing this. You had some students. You could lean into it harder. I just want to come back to a little point you made there about when you were saying, you know, I can't do it. I can't play piano, which is, isn't it so interesting? The little things, like to me as someone, obviously not a singer, not a singing teacher, as someone who isn't in that, I think, well, why would that be a big thing? I feel like that's a little thing. But these little details can really hold us back from leaning into it, right? It's
exactly.
Had you ever really sort of even thought of it consciously, or it was just this thing that you automatically reflexively were like, oh, I can't because?
Yeah, it had never been something I had considered for myself. Because I go to singing teachers, right? I'm not a singing teacher. I go to them to get better. Singing teachers have singing teachers. Like a counsellor has a counsellor, you know? Like it. But for some reason, it had just never crossed my mind as something that I could do. And then when she said, oh, you should teach, that was the very first thing. Oh, I can't because I can't play piano. Consciously or subconsciously, it had become this little story I had told myself for why I couldn't do something.
Mm-hmm. And so you took the time, you actually had a bit of a think about it, leaned into it, started it on the side, and then the redundancy happened. You thought, okay, let's go. What was that moment like when you're thinking, I'm going to try this out for myself? No safety net of a big company, of a steady salary, of this organization around me. I'm just going to lean into this and see how far I can push it. Bit scary?
Really scary. Yeah. So I had dipped my toe into self-employment briefly when I came back from having my first child and felt that it really wasn't for me in that moment because I hadn't found the thing that was going to do it for me, right? I was testing the thing. I was trying to do recruitment on my own. And then I went into asset finance. We don't even talk about that. But that didn't do well and it was very unstable. And so now doing something on my own felt like a stupid idea, but I also knew I had to do it. I sat down and I looked at what my options were, right? So one of them was stop the teaching, just go back to something full time, mm-hmm. which I don't really want to do because I actually really like my kids. I really enjoy spending time with them. And I know not everyone has the luxury of being able to make decisions like this, right? Mm-hmm. I'll definitely preface this by saying that. But I could go back to full-time work and stop the teaching. I could try and find a part-time job that would flex with the teaching. I teach at very random hours of the day. So that wasn't really an option either. Or I could just do it and work it out. And so I felt like I actually didn't have a choice. As scary as it felt for my heart and my soul, I had to do it and I had to give it a try at least, you know?
Yeah. Oh, I know. And looking back now, spoiler alert, it's gone really well. Looking back now, yeah. It's easy to be like, oh, and it was fine and everything was great. But as you've mentioned, you'd tried other things before. And I think very few people come to a stage in life where they haven't had things that they've tried and didn't work out. There's the pros on that where you can learn from experience. Great. Mm. There's the cons where it can also be a bit scarring and it can give you self-doubt of, oh God, I don't want to try another thing that fails and I look silly or I lose money or I can't provide for my kids or whatever. How much was that weighing up? I mean, what sort of other things, you've given us a really quick overview of the things you tried before. What sort of other things had you tried in the past? And how much did that feed into this decision and either hold you back or light the fire under you?
There's quite a long list of things. I was reflecting on this actually. So I did the recruitment briefly, which was fine. I still hated it, even doing it on my own. And then I had the asset finance again. We don't go there. I tried furniture upcycling for a while, which I really enjoyed. I did sell a piece, but very labor intensive for the return that you get. I tried clothes reselling. Mm-hmm. So selling people secondhand clothes for them to make a tiny little profit on each one. Again, very labor intensive for not much. And then I had a really good business idea that I was so sure of that I was going to do, which was like a menu planning service. So each week people would get, a plan of what they could go and get that week. And it just took the thinking away. And it felt like a really good idea. But I was just about to have my second child. And so I said, I actually can't do this. And it already exists. So I was just kind of going to do a bit of a different iteration of it. So there was a lot of failures. They didn't really hold me back or put me off. I knew already that the singing teaching was working quite well. Mm-hmm. I had already got a few students quite quickly, which was great. And I was really enjoying it. I think with the previous failures, they didn't really register as failures at the time. It was just like, okay, that didn't work, move on. It almost didn't even register. But I want to just go back to something that you said previously, being seen. I think the biggest hurdle for me in setting anything up for myself was getting over the fear of being seen and being judged. Once I got over that little hump, it's like the whole world opened up. Yeah. So the very first thing I set up was the gardening TikTok, which was just for fun. When I first started that, I felt so yucky putting videos of myself out there. What if my friends see it? What if people who don't like me see it? And then the same with the singing, setting that up. It was, oh my God, what if people think I'm doing something really stupid? Well, actually, who cares what other people think? And the biggest thing I've found is the amount of support that has come through since I've been doing all of this is insane. You know, I'm sure there's some people in the background going, oh, you know, whatever, and Beth doing something silly. But I've had an overwhelming amount of messages from people I haven't spoken to for years, decades, saying, I admire so much what you're doing at the moment. It's so cool to see someone do this. And it feels like I've got so many people in my corner. I think just recognizing that is like, whoa, people want you to succeed. Oh my God, who'd have thought, right? It's amazing.
Isn't it funny? Because that was one of the big takeaways from an episode that I did previously, one of the very first episodes. Actually, I think it was the very first episode in this new podcast, where I was talking to Sarah from the One Up Project, and she talked about, you know, she works as a digital nomad. And so finding that remote work that works, and especially she's quite picky about her projects, can be really hard. And she just said, chuck it on your LinkedIn, talk to people you've worked before. Because there's something exciting for people about being involved with someone who's really clear about their goals and clear about what they want. And what she'd found was that people got a buzz from helping her, even if there was actually very little in it for them, because they liked being involved with someone who was motivated and successful. It was just nice being around that energy. And what's interesting is it sounds like you've found the same thing, is even if it's not necessarily people who are helping you out with job links and things like that, there are people on the sidelines who enjoy seeing that, enjoy seeing the motivation and you going for it. There is an energy from that that is contagious and is fun to be around, right?
Yeah, people seem to love it. And I will also say, ask people for help. People want to help you. People get a really warm, fuzzy feeling from helping you do something or giving you some information. We are often, I was scared to ask people in case I was annoying them. And if they don't want to help you, then they just won't. You know, nothing lost, nothing gained, right?
Yep.
But the vast majority of people, if you ask them for some help or for some advice or whatever, are so willing to share that knowledge. It's been overwhelming, the amount that I have gained just from approaching people and saying, hey, I'm thinking of doing this. What are your thoughts? Do you have any advice? You've done this before.
That community wisdom is so great. I mean, there are people who, as I started out getting this podcast up and running after years of being quite institutionalized in a big company, going out on my own was terrifying. And talking to other people who'd made similar leaps, some of them doing similar things in the podcast space, some of them doing very different things, but doing that sort of soul trader life or single, you know, solopreneur life, that sort of thing. Talking to them was so invaluable, and most of them just gave me their time and experiences for free. And then quite recently, I've had a couple of them come back and say, "Ooh, what you're doing there seems to be working really well. Can you tell me what you're doing?" And I have just fallen over myself to be able to pay it back to them and be like, "Yes, please take all of this information I can give you and what I did here," because it's so nice to be part of that supportive community. I really feel like I saw, it's a stupid Instagram meme, but I saw something the other day of the people at the top are collaborating, not competing.
Yeah.
It's really true. And most of the, there are always exceptions, but most of the successful people I have met, and I've met quite a few in my travels around for work, most of them are interested in collaborating. They want to be around other successful people. They're not gatekeeping. It's a really interesting mindset shift from, I think, sometimes what people might expect.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a big shift for me, going from people will judge me, people don't want me to succeed, to, oh my goodness, everyone really wants me to win. Amazing. And it feels like it's just opened up the world to me.
Yeah.
Just by changing that mindset.
Life is full of ups and downs. So no matter what your everyday looks like, KiwiBank has the products and services to help you manage your money your way. To find out more, head to kiwibank.co.nz. This is making Kiwi better off. This is KiwiBank.
So let's talk about your world opening up a bit, because it really has. We've obviously talked a bit about the vocal coaching that you do, which is fantastic and was your first step into this solopreneur lifestyle. But you've got a whole bunch of stuff going on. Talk to me about the various projects you have now and where they all sort of, at what point in the timeline they came in. You know, walk me through the timeline of you saying, I'll have a bit of that, a bit of that, a bit of that. How did that go?
Yeah, so the first thing was the TikTok. So I am an avid gardener. I love gardening. And I just wanted to make some garden videos. And I tested a few different things and I found a route that seems to be quite successful that people like, which is kind of ASMR-y style things.
I find your gardening videos so soothing. Every time they come up on my feed, I'm just like, ah, it's like 60 seconds of just peace.
Yeah, exactly. So that I just started for a little bit of fun. But prior to starting that, I had decided that this year was going to be my screw it, have a go and see what happens year. Just in regards to little things, but it seems to have just changed my entire life too. So I started that. Then I set up the vocal coaching, as I talked about earlier. And then when I got made redundant, the vocal coaching wasn't quite making me enough money. So I needed something else just to fill some gaps somewhere. So I was searching around for things to do. And a friend of mine had recently had her second baby. She is German and her husband is Aussie, Peruvian. So they are here without any support whatsoever. And having a second baby, I was like, oh my goodness, I wish there was a service where you could go in and help people who've just had a baby, you know, keep up with the laundry, take the baby for a walk so you can have a sleep, cook them lovely nourishing meals, whatever. So I went on the breastfeeding group on Facebook, Breastfeeding New Zealand or something, and I said, who would be interested in service? How much would you pay? And someone said, that's a postpartum doula. So I went and Googled it. And it is exactly what I had invented, was being a postpartum doula. So I thought, okay, let's just set up a website, see what happens. I feel comfortable to enter this space. And I caught up with Lily, the doula. She's in Hamilton. She's got a big social media. She's absolutely amazing. Reached out to her and said, hey, can I have some of your time, please? Can I take you for a coffee and just talk about what it looks like? So we did that and I set it up and I got a client immediately. And then because it's my screw it, have a go and see what happens year, I auditioned for a professional singing touring production. And then I got that, which is just like, oh my goodness, I can actually do the things I want to do. Whoa, who knew? So it seems like I've got so many things, but I actually work so much less than I did previously. I have, I think, 12 singing students now, and the lessons are 45 minutes each. So what that comes to, what, I don't know, 9 hours a week or something? The doula work, it depends what package people choose, but it's no more than 15 hours a week, usually. The singing, the tour will be a big thing. And the TikTok stuff is just bits and bats here and there to make some extra cash. So it seems like a huge amount of things I'm doing. How do you fit it all in? I'm so much more relaxed than I was before doing this, taking this leap. I'm able to keep up with the house jobs. I get to spend time with my kids. I can go at a pace that suits me. You know, with my ADHD, I've figured out a way to work with that works for me, rather than trying to fit into the mold of what you should be doing, which turns out was actually just burning me out without me realizing. So it's been an absolute game changer for my sense of well-being and my whole life, truly. I think this is actually going to be a life thing now. This is going to be a forever, because there's been so many things where I go, oh, I probably shouldn't do that. And then my brain goes, no, screw it, have a go, see what happens. And then I'll put some effort into it and either it'll work or it won't. If it works, incredible. And if it doesn't, who cares, right? You've had a go.
Absolutely. And I so agree with you on that. And it's funny, isn't it? You mentioned previously about that fear of being seen, which makes me think of your gardening TikTok particularly. TikTok, you never know, right? TikTok is a weird one. But when a video booms, it'll really boom. It can reach a whole bunch of people. I've literally been shopping in Farmers one time and someone was like, Frances Cook, financial journalist. The way they said it, I could just tell it's my little like TikTok introduction. And it was really funny, you know, this stuff pops up in funny places. And yet when I first started taking TikTok seriously, I wasn't very good at it, to be honest. It took me a real long time to hit my groove on what I wanted to do. It was scary to do. And it's all well and good once you've built up some followers and you have that kind of proof of, well, some people like it and it's okay if you don't. Before you have those followers, you can feel like a bit of a dill. I mean, I feel like social media is one of the hardest things to take seriously and grit your way through that first little bit. Was that hard?
Yeah. It didn't feel that serious to me because it was just a fun little thing that I was doing. I want to expand on something you just said there, that you weren't very good at it. And that's been a huge learning curve for me, is you've got to learn to be okay with being rubbish at something.
You've got to be bad before you can be good, 100%.
You've got to be bad before you can be good. You know, some people, yes, go onto TikTok and explode immediately. The vast majority of people don't do that. So you just try some things, right? I tried lots of different types of videos and I figured out what my kind of niche was, what seemed to be doing well. I mainly just copied videos that I saw doing well, right? The ASMR harvesty type stuff. And lo and behold, people seem to like it. I still test different things now. And because TikTok has got my little niche, it doesn't push it out to people, which is fine. I will still continue to do it because I enjoy it. But I think you're getting okay with being rubbish first is a game changer.
It's such a life hack in general, right? Once you accept, if I want to be good at something, I will have to be bad at it first. And I might have to be bad at it a little bit publicly. Obviously, you want to keep the length of time that you're bad at it short. You want to be actively working on improving, but you're still going to have to be bad for a certain amount of time. Once you truly embrace that, at first that's scary, but once you truly embrace it, I found it freeing. What about you?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Well, it's just like, screw it, whatever. I'll be bad at it for a while. I'll get better. Yeah. And you know, it's really satisfying when you are rubbish at something and when it's something that's brand new to you, you improve really quickly. You know, I see it all the time in the studio when I'm teaching people, oh, I can't sing. Most people can sing much better than they think they can. But because it's something brand new, you improve incredibly quickly, and which is like the most satisfying thing, right?
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the business side of things, because you do have a family. You do have to keep a roof over your head. When you were looking at setting this up, you've got the gardening TikTok.
Yeah.
You've got the vocal coaching. You've got touring as a professional singer now. You've got the doula work.
Yeah.
How does the pricing of all of those work? How lumpy, how stable is it? You don't have to run us through actual prices. Just talk us through sort of the structure.
Yeah, of course. So the vocal coaching is the most stable thing because people come weekly. I do offer one-off lessons, but they don't happen as often. But people come weekly. They pay per month. And so that's kind of the base, right? And then the doula work is a bit more random, but it's a chunk in one go, which is a nice little boost sometimes. The singing touring, because it's quite an intense period of 5 weeks, that will be another kind of chunk. I'll still continue teaching online during that time. So I'll still have that kind of stable background, which is good. And then the TikTok is just like pocket money, really. Like it's just, I don't rely on it. I don't put any of my eggs really in that basket. But if someone wants to work with me, then I do. So it's just a little bonus from time to time.
What strikes me about that, and I'd love to know how deliberate this was, is you've actually replicated a really smart pricing model. You see a lot of businesses go for the subscription model, right? Yep. Netflix and whatever is an obvious one, but you also see, you know, heaps of business services want to sign you up on a monthly retainer or whatever.
Yeah.
And having that steady locked in income so you can plan is really smart. But often, if people are going to commit to something long term, they want it to be slightly lower. Whereas then you've also built in this opportunity for, you know, your sort of moonshot money, the bigger chunks that can make a big difference. You could whack a bunch off the mortgage, or you could do whatever your goals might be. The bigger chunks that come along, but that maybe aren't so reliable, and you've combined those in a really smart way. How deliberate was that? Was it just kind of how it panned out?
I would really, really love to say that I masterminded the whole thing, but I didn't. It was just when I had that moment of, what do I do now I've been made redundant? I came up with something that I knew was going to fit with the flexibility that I needed. And I possibly could have come up with something that was, you know, similar model, kind of subscription-based model. But just what I came up with happened to be that. And it's just very fortunately for me played out that way.
Yeah. And it's interesting, isn't it? Because when you look back at your previous working life and you're saying, you know, you're working less now, and you don't have to give us too much of an insight into your finances, just whatever you're feeling comfortable to say. But in terms of the money side, more or less?
I'm now slightly more than my role. So there's been a couple of little touch and go moments as things were transitioning, but now I am earning more than I was when I was employed in what I felt was a pretty well paying role.
So working less, earning more, flexibility for doing things on your own time. I'm hearing a lot of pros. This is sounding pretty good. Were there cons? I suppose the touch and go moments are the cons.
Yeah, it's being okay with those. Are we okay moments? Because they are scary sometimes, and I'm sure there'll be more. I think sometimes it's a bit of a juggle with the time of things. You know, sometimes it's a lot more intense than others. But if we were to put it on a weighing scale, it is very heavy on the pro side, and there's like a little sprinkling of cons.
Yeah, no, that's been exactly what I found. And do you know what I found as well? Is going out on my own. There was so much about it that I thought I'd be rubbish at, that I just had a story about myself of I'm not good at XYZ, and that's going to be bad, and I'm either going to have to muddle through it and be bad at it, or I maybe will have to bring someone in to do that for me. And particularly things like bringing in sponsors and sales, I was terrified of doing that. Turns out that's actually been one of my big strengths. Turns out I've been really, really good at that, which I was not expecting. It has been night and day different. But I think also what I have found is when it is my own thing, I'm so much more invested. I'm so much more interested. And I don't believe in dream jobs. Every job has admin that you don't necessarily want to do, and plenty of that.
Great.
But I have found I can push the business in directions that I am more interested in a way that I couldn't previously. I can still lean towards those things that I find the most interesting. And literally Sunday night, I was just getting ready, prepping for the week ahead. I jumped on my little walking pad so I could get some steps in. Such a white girl. So I could get some steps in while I was doing my emails. And you know, listening through some audio, proofing it, sent off just a couple of emails to my audio engineer, checked in with a couple of other people, just prepped things for the week ahead. And it really struck me while I was sort of halfway through it. I was like, it's Sunday evening, the kids are in bed, I could be sitting watching Netflix. I'm actually really happy here. I'm actually so enjoying this, just having a little quiet time, getting my business ready for the week. And I don't begrudge this in the slightest. There is not a single part of me that is begrudging this. Yeah. Again, it's not the old find a job you love and you'll never work a day in your life. Still work. But it was enjoyable work. It was satisfying. I felt good about it. How have you felt in terms of that satisfaction piece and leaning into the parts that you enjoy? Having things a bit more on your terms, even if there's still business realities.
Yeah. I will very first just say, I think anyone that knows you, Frances, knew you were going to nail this. You just had to convince
you.
Yourself
I didn't.
First. Yeah, I know. But yes, you were always going to nail it because it's who you are. Anyway. but yes, I 100% agree with what you're saying. There's the admin that I'm not amazing at. but it's okay because it's for my own business and I'm doing it so that I get paid instead of someone else, you know? I was thinking about this the other day. One of the biggest things for me has been being able to just exist as myself instead of what I now realize was putting on a performance of work, Beth, you know? I think a lot of that is to do with the ADHD and masking and not realizing I had it. Now knowing and being able to lean into that, I am able to just be myself and people will either like that and work with me or not. I don't have to pretend anything. Yeah. And that just makes me feel so much more fulfilled as a person, which is just amazing.
Yeah. And I love that for you as well. Can I just say as well, when you got into the performing and you started taking on the professional singing roles, I knew you'd started vocal coaching. I knew you'd been singing for a while. Love you. Didn't realize quite how good you were. So not that I meant to underestimate you, but kind of did. Just going to like dob myself in there. And when we went to see you perform, because obviously you're performing, friends come along, went to see you perform. And I had this moment of, oh, she's not just in this musical. She's one of the main characters. And she's not just singing. She's really good, like really proper good. It was so funny just seeing you in your element shining. But I think it's exactly what you were just saying there, that you were being fully really yourself and you didn't feel like you had to hold anything back. And I think obviously it came out on stage, thankfully, great performance. But I think it bleeds into so many other areas of life, doesn't it? When you're doing something that you really believe in yourself and you're feeling more fulfilled in. For people who are wanting to become self-employed for whatever reason, they might have had the shock to the system that parenthood provides. It might have been something else. But if anyone is listening to this and thinking, I get what she's saying here and I want to try a bit of this self-employed life, this trying to do my own thing. If someone is wanting to follow in your footsteps, what's the top advice you have for them?
I think there's a couple of things, if I'm allowed to say two. I think the first one would be, don't set your prices based on what you can afford. Set them based on what you think you're worth. Yes, times are hard. A lot of people are struggling for money. People will still spend money on things that make them feel good. You know, a singing lesson makes you feel really good. You get so many great endorphins from singing and people will still pay. Similarly with the doula work, you know, I wouldn't be able to afford a doula, but some people can. And so you should charge what you think you're worth. And the other thing I think reflects on the whole conversation that we've had is you can just do things and no one will stop you from doing those things, you know, unless you're doing something illegal, actively harming people. you can just do things. You know, I built a website, called myself a vocal coach. Now I'm a vocal coach. I built another website, called myself a doula. Now I'm a doula. People pay me. I decided I was a singer and so now I'm a singer. You know, you can just do things. And I think I, for a very long time, was waiting for either the conditions to be perfect or for someone to give me permission. You give yourself permission and you just do it. It's how it works. The people that are successful are the people that do things. As simple as it sounds and as obvious as it sounds, I think a lot of us have a block in our heads that doesn't allow us to just do it. You know, don't go and join an MLM or a pyramid scheme. But if you want to go and teach piano because you know how to play piano, do it. Someone will pay you.
100%. I so agree. There's this real, we hold back waiting for what? Some sort of certification, some sort of someone to give us permission to do it, someone to say, you are this now. And I think that is why a lot of us stay at companies, because being hired for a certain role is almost validation of you can be this now. Whereas you really actually don't have to do that. You can just give it a crack. And yes, you should have something to offer. But I think there's more risk of us underestimating ourselves than overestimating ourselves. Most people underestimate the skills they bring to the table.
100%.
And so it is fine to look at the skills you've got and say, I can teach that. I can do that. I also think your pricing point, such an important one, such an important one. I, you know, just lifting the lid, I'm expensive. It took me a long time to be able to say that in a way where I can say it and not sort of cringe. But I am.
And you're worth it.
Well, thank you. I'm loving this hyping each other up conversation. Isn't it so nice to be able to talk to each other without the toddlers intervening all the time? Where we can just give each other compliments and talk business?
Yeah, I love it.
But it's like, you know, if I'm going to do something cheaply, I'd rather not do it at all. Because that's time I could be spending with my kids, with my husband, with my friends. It's time I could be spending doing something else. So to do something for cheap or even for free sometimes, you know, the old do it for exposure, it's going to have to be really good for me to do that. And most of the time, not. And I have very deliberately looked at my pricing and said, I'm going to set my pricing so that if something falls over, I'm still okay. You know, I don't have to have sold everything, and it gives you that real freedom. But it's hard, isn't it? To, again, it's that old thing. Most people will tell others, set your prices high. When it comes to doing it for ourselves, really hard to back yourself. And it's a bit of a muscle that you have to build up to be able to say, I'm expensive and I'm worth it.
When I first started teaching singing, I was probably half the price of every other vocal coach in Hamilton. And then I went and met with my mentor, and he was like, what are you doing? You are worth so much more than this. And even still, he's like, you still need to put your prices up. And I'll get there, I think. But at the moment, I don't want to. But, you know, if people are like, well, that's too expensive. It's like, okay, well, you can't afford me then. You know, I'm nice to people. Yeah. But it's, you know, in the social media space, people are, I'll send you a product if you can make me a video. Well, no, because that's actually my time, and other people pay for my time. If you want me to do something, you can pay me for it. And that's something that I feel like I still have a way to go with it, but it's kind of clicking in as of late of no, my time is worth money. Other people pay me the money that I'm worth. If you don't want to pay that, then just don't. And that's like, oh, you know, sending business away is like, scary, but you have to.
It's totally okay to say, that's all right. We're not a fit. We'll stay in touch. But at the end of the day, if I'm doing work, I'm getting paid for it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. We are out of time. I could keep talking forever. I feel like this is mostly an excuse for me to talk to you again without the children interrupting. I'm loving it.
Not 800 half conversations.
Exactly. God, the amount of times you leave my house and I'm just like, oh, I started telling her this and I totally didn't even get to the point of my story whatsoever. Thank God for Facebook Messenger.
Yeah.
But where can people find you if they want to follow more of your various business projects? Where can they follow you?
All right, let me start the list. Okay, so we've got a TikTok is Beth's Garden_. I think if you want to look at the vocal coaching, it's Beth VickersVocalCoach.com. I do have social media for that, but I'm less good at it. So just pop on the website. I'm also going to start putting some of my singing stuff on there as well, and maybe try and do some private gigs, you know, weddings, whatever. For the doula work, it's WarmBeginningsDoula.com or just WarmBeginningsDoula on social media. Again, it's better just on the website. My brain can only seem to do like one major social media, and it has allocated gardening to that. So the other ones are the website. So Beth's Garden_, Beth Vickers Vocal Coach, and Warm Beginnings Doula.
And if anyone is having difficulty following that or remembering all those various places to find you, I will also get Beth to send me the links for all of that. I will pop them in the show notes. So just jump into the show notes. You can easily click on through to check out all her various businesses. If you have any questions about this or anything else to do with money, do come and talk to me about it. You can find me on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok as Frances Cook NZ. But honestly, if you want to make sure social media algorithms don't stop us from talking to each other, there's also my newsletter. You can sign up for that on my website, francescook.co.nz. Sign up to the money memo there. And that is also linked in the show notes if you want an easy way to stay in touch there. Don't forget to subscribe to Making Sense everywhere you find podcasts. And until next time, have a great day.
Just a note before you go, this podcast can only give you general information about how things work in most cases. It's not individual financial advice. We're all different, so some of this might not apply to your specific situation. Take what works for you, ignore the rest. If you're after individual financial advice, a financial advisor is always the best bet.